Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you, those of you who are attending, for attending. I'm going to give my best effort at a talk tonight. The title of the talk is called Poisons Have Antidotes. In his first sermon after his enlightenment, the Buddha gave the teaching called the Four Noble Truths. It's said that the four truths contain the entire Dharma, because all of the Buddha's teachings are connected to and contained in these truths. The first truth is the truth of dukkha, a Pali Sanskrit word that's often translated as suffering, but which might also be translated as ignorance. What is dukkha? In our ignorance of the fundamental nature of reality, we believe that phenomena and the self are fixed and permanent. Blindly clinging to the idea that the self is separate, autonomous, and fixed causes people to compete for possessions, status, approval, to attempt to shame others while trying to elevate themselves. The antidote to this first of the three poisons is to make our best effort to cultivate true wisdom by recognizing that phenomena and self do not exist in a concrete or fixed way. When we understand that we are not a fixed entity separate from all other entities, we will understand that harming others is actually and really harming ourselves. Also, we may recognize that in giving kindness to others, we participate in the feeling of receiving kindness. The illusion of a separate fixed self prevents us from seeing our true way in life, our true connectedness to life. By extending care to other beings, we enter into the flow of being. The second poison concerns the origins of dukkha, or suffering. Dukkha is caused by attachment. The Buddha said, and this, monks, is the noble truth of the origination of dukkha. It is craving that makes for further becoming, accompanied by passion and delight, relishing now here and now there, craving for sensual pleasure, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming. The Pali word translated as craving is tanha, which more literally means thirst. It describes a strong need that screams to be quenched. We should understand that craving is not the only cause of life's difficulties. It's only the most obvious cause, the most evident symptom. There are other factors that create and feed the craving, and we should try to understand them too. Again, the misconception here is our clinging to the idea of self as separate from everyone and everything else. Blindly clinging to the idea that the self is a separate, autonomous, and fixed entity causes people to compete for possessions, for status and approval, to attempt to shame others while trying to elevate themselves. The antidote to this poison is to make our best effort to recognize and remind ourselves that phenomena and self are not solid or unchanging. Greed is the first poison. Those in the grip of greed are willing to do anything, even if it causes great harm to others, to obtain wealth and status, to be looked up to by others, to have possessions that will be envied, to have power over the lives of others. In the grip of this poison, we care only about how we are seen by others and how we may dominate others. Recognizing our human tendency toward greed, we can seek the antidote by cultivating loving kindness toward all beings. Becoming intimate with a feeling of warmth, care, and connection to all beings, we soothe the competitive urge to control others, to raise ourselves up by putting others down. Again, we are receiving by giving, not by grasping. The second poison is anger. This too arises from ignorance because we feel apart from other beings and don't see the interconnectedness of everyone and everything. The antidote to this is to first accept our own imperfect nature and cultivate kind encouragement toward ourselves to do better. Then we may be able to extend the same kind acceptance and goodwill toward all others. It may be said that the things we crave are not harmful things. We might crave even becoming a philanthropist or a monk or a healer. It's the craving that's the problem, not what is craved. It's a very important distinction. The second truth is not telling us we have to give up what we love and enjoy in life. Instead, the second truth asks us to look deeper into the nature of craving and how we relate to the things we love and enjoy. In looking into the nature of clinging or attachment, we can see that in order for there to be clinging, you need two things, a clinger and something to cling to. So it requires, in other words, clinging requires self-reference, and it requires seeing the object of clinging as separate from oneself. The Buddha taught that seeing the world this way, as me in here and everything else out there, is an illusion. Further, this illusion, this self-centered perspective, causes our insatiable craving. It's because we think there is a me that must be protected, promoted, and indulged that we crave. And along with craving comes jealousy, hate, fear, and the other impulses that cause us to harm others and ourselves. We really cannot will ourselves to stop craving. As long as we perceive ourselves to be separate from everything else, the craving continues. Not clinging to a separate self doesn't ask us to withdraw from the world and cut ourselves off from everything we enjoy and everyone we love. To do so would just be more craving, more ego. Instead, it encourages us to enjoy and to love without clinging, without possessing, grasping, or trying to manipulate. Our way offers healing to us by advising us to be mindful of craving, to observe and understand it. And it calls on us to use Buddha's teaching of the Eightfold Path to help us accept the true nature of our life and our reality. That's it. That's what I have to say. I was craving another page.
That's what she wrote.
Thank you, everyone. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Thank you for going back to basics.
Okay.
It's nice to hear that. I forget about it.
I think we all forget about it from day to day. And I find I have to remind myself, and I felt perhaps other people feel the same way.
Oh, it's very nice. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for your comment. Anybody else have a comment? Diane?
Thank you, too, for going back to basics. As you went through those things, I was thinking, it is a practice, right? This is called practice. And it's not like you just read it once and then you've got it. It's like you have to keep going back, like Martha said, to the basics and remind ourselves of the basis of our Buddhist teaching.
It's true. I found it for myself. I wanted to just go back and look at these basic teachings because we do tend to move on and, you know, look for more high-flown philosophical concepts,
right, exactly,
and all of that. But the very basics of this practice are so clear and so beautiful. And, you know, I just found myself really wanting to experience them again.
Yeah.
I look forward to your next lecture.
Oh, thank you. Sweet. So there's only a few of us here today. So Dave, would you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you for your talk, Lee. I'm particularly interested in things like what you said about dukkha being suffering and tanha being thirst and so forth. I mean, anytime you translate an important idea or an important word from one language to another, there's a tendency for some of its meanings in the original language to fall off and some other ones to accrete themselves onto it. So it's a good idea, I think, to do what you did, which is to look at sort of alternate translations of these words and not necessarily come up with one that's perfect, but rather to sort of let them all marinate in your head and get some feeling for what the word actually meant in its original context. Mm-hmm. One translation for dukkha that I saw actually in the title of a book is discontent. And the book was entitled Dismantling Discontent. And of course, it was about Zen practice. And similarly, the idea that craving, literally tanha, means thirst. One of the things that I think sometimes seems puzzling is when you see people who are full bore into the accumulation of things, of money, of possessions. You know, if somebody has $5 million, they want 10. If they have 10, they want 50. If they have 50, they want 100 million. And if they have 100 million, they want a billion. I mean, it's just, there's no satisfaction of it because there's always this discontent. And they end up sort of being like the proverbial donkey who's chasing after the carrot on the end of a string that's being held out in front of them and just keeps chasing and chasing and chasing. And the carrot is always receding no matter how far they go. And I think we have an illusion sometimes when we're in the grip of craving that, oh, if I could just get that, then I would be happy, then I would be satisfied. And of course, the minute you get that, you want the next thing, you want more, because the discontent isn't really based on the fact that you don't have those things. It's based, as you said, on something much deeper than that, your feeling of separation from the world. And I really wonder sometimes especially when you look at these sort of mega rich people, the real mystery is not, you know, well, why weren't they satisfied with one yacht? Why did they have to have two? Why do they need houses everywhere? Why do they need billions of dollars? It's that it's not the having of the things, it's the acquisition of the things that motivates them. And the having is just sort of a side effect of this craving to acquire, because they're frantically trying to paper over this discontent that they feel, and acquisition just never does it.
I think that in feeling this hunger inside them, as you say, they keep trying to make their own image bigger and bigger, so that maybe, you know, through other people looking up to them, they might feel, you know, more, that they are more. And it's never enough, no matter how, as you say, you know. So what I was seeing in, you know, the way that many people in the world act is that it was really about shoring up their own image. That many of the things that people do that we would think of as harmful and bad are done because they just are so anxious to be looked up to, or to be seen, or to be admired, or just to be powerful. And, you know, it's a real sickness, and our society seems to be all on board with it. You know, at many times that just really makes me sad.
Yes.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you for your talk.
Oh, yes, Diane.
I just want to say that maybe it's on a smaller scale, but in my life, I recognize all of those things coming up all of the time. You know, discontent and craving and thirst and wanting more. I think when we're really honest with ourselves,
we
have that in us. It's part of being human. And I think by sitting and practicing, we recognize when something comes up of, oh, I'm being selfish, I'm being wanting more, it's never enough. Why do I want to go out shopping today? Why do I have to have that? Do I really need that?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we all do that.
I do that.
And I have to recognize
I think
that
we all can myself. See ourselves in that.
Yeah. So we can't change the world.
Yeah.
We can't change other people. We can change ourselves. And it's by being honest with ourselves and seeing our own humanness, our own frailties, and how we deal with them.
I think you've got it precisely. I was feeling that, you know, when I wanted to sit down and write this was, we live in such a competitive place here in Silicon Valley. And, you know, we see all different kinds of people, but, you know, so many of them are sort of, you know, puffing up their chest and, you know, practically, you know, it's just this, I'm a big man, I'm a big woman, I'm more powerful than you are, I invented this or I did that. And, you know, I think to myself, we really, in to differing degrees, we all want to be seen and admired by other people. We want to be respected by other people. And I kind of wanted to dig a little bit into, you know, what is this craving that we have, and really, how should we deal with it? So I don't know if anybody else has ideas on that, Martha.
My husband used to say it was all about power, exercising power. And I sort of see that translated on the internet as influencers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's whoever can have the most sway over the most number of people. And that's accumulating wealth beyond what one needs is having power over someone. Buy an island, you know, just go on and on and on.
Yeah.
But that's our society. And the best we can do is do ourselves. Work on ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's a good point. We have the same tendencies.
Yeah, we all do. And it's not because we're bad people.
We're people.
You know, we're people. We, you know, we all do want to be seen. We want to be respected. You know, we want to feel that we're somebody in our community or in our family or, you know, whatever group that we're in. And so these feelings come up in everybody. It's not just, you know, it's not just notoriously evil people who are like this. So I appreciate all of you kind of joining in on talking about this, because it's something that, you know, that I have been kind of thinking about a lot lately.
It's the basics of Buddhism.
Yeah. And going back to the basics sometimes is good. What you were talking about, going back to Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind with Norman's group, with Everyday Zen. I remember we did a whole series on that here on Wednesday nights at Canon Do, where we read one chapter every week. And it was great. Because Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind is a book that, you know, you can read it 15 times and each time something different hits you about it. You get something out of it. It's amazing.
I think we have our next Wednesday series coming up.
Where?
Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind.
Oh, you're suggesting that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we used to do, you know, different books, and it's fun to do that with a group. So maybe we will go back to that again sometime soon. Today is a particularly cold and rainy night, so we don't have too many people here today. We wouldn't have enough to join in, but maybe in the future. So, well, thank you so much, everybody who came for coming.
This talk was brought to you by the Canandoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canandoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.